Thank you, David, and thanks to everybody for joining me here this afternoon or this evening, wherever you are. My name is Christy, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'll just qualify that I have been in recovery for 42 years. My current length of abstinence is, well, I would tell you that it is 30 years, but in fact, the person who woke up earliest this morning is the one who has the longest abstinence of all of us here together today. I'm maintaining a 100-pound weight loss. And I'm really delighted to be here. So I'm going to tell, as it says in the big book, our stories disclose in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And so that's what I'm going to be doing. I think that I was born with this disease. I know that all babies are chubby, but it's true. My mother says I was a chubby baby, and I look at the photos, and yeah, I was a chubby baby. I was a chubby little kid. I was a chubby growing kid. I was a definitely overweight adolescent. My earliest memories are of getting home from school. This was like first grade, second grade, and sitting down in the living room with a very large snack and my book and reading all afternoon. And, you know, hiding food in my bedroom when it was my responsibility to clear the table after dinner. You walked from the dining room into the kitchen through a swinging door. And if the door was propped at just the right angle, I could sneak around behind it so that I could hide while I cleared everybody's plates. And I didn't clear them into the garbage. I cleared them right into, I mean, I was the garbage receptacle. I do not have a diet history. I dieted once in my life before I came to this program, which relieved me of having to diet ever again. There was one time when I was in high school, I would have been about 13 or 14, when puberty and my height and my weight all aligned. And for 37 seconds, I was a normal weight. And then because my behavior didn't change, I continued to go on compulsively eating. The weight then started to climb again. But when I was in college, after my first year in college, I took a job as a lifeguard for the summer at my town's reservoir. And so I want you to imagine with me, actually, I don't have to imagine, but I invite you to imagine. There I am in a bright red bathing suit, an international signal orange t-shirt up on the lifeguard stand. So you could not miss me. And I was large and in charge. And that's where I spent 2 months of that summer. Now, the next year, I had the same job, but this year, I woke up one morning, and this was possibly my first spiritual experience. I woke up one morning, and instead of saying to myself, I don't want to look like this anymore, it was, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want to be this way. And so I put myself on a diet. That was my first experience of a diet, or my only experience of a diet. Knock wood. Please God. I restricted myself to 900 calories a day, and I was bicycling back and forth to the pond. And so, of course, I was going to lose weight. I mean, 900 calories, I got to tell you, it's absurd. And especially at exercising as much as I was. To this day, I can tell you the calorie count in 10 black olives. I can tell you the calorie count in a packet of Sweet and Low and in certain other food items. It was so firmly imprinted in my brain. And I lost the weight. So I go back to my third year of college, and I was in a relationship that I just did not know how to get out of. So I did the obvious thing. I fled. I went to Europe for the year to, you know, study. And I binged my way across Europe. I was in, during the academic year, I was in a program, a study abroad program, and I stole food from my housemates. I stole their clothes. Because when you don't ask permission to use what belongs to somebody else, that is stealing. So with their clothes, even though I would, you know, wash them and put them back, it was stealing. So this is what I did. And, you know, I binged my way across Europe, and I have vivid memories of standing in line at certain stores to get my binge foods and thinking, Christy, neither your pocketbook nor your figure can afford what you are about to do, because I knew I was going to do it anyway, that there was nothing that could stop me. A couple of years after I graduated from college, I was living out on the west coast of the U.S. in California, in the Berkeley area, and my weight just kept going up and up and up. And so I remembered that there was somebody from my past who I thought lived out in my area and was now had also been overweight and had lost it through some crazy program where they required her to drink a case of grape diet soda a day. I have no idea where I got that. And that she was a therapist. So I tracked her down, and I had that first experience that I've since had many times of somebody completely listening to me on the other end of the telephone. Just listening, not giving me advice, not telling me what to do, just listening. And so I started to work with her as my therapist. And in our first session, she said to me, "Has it ever occurred to you that you have a disease?" And this was a completely new and really transformational idea. It had never occurred to me. And so she told me about OA. She talked about the disease of compulsive, in those days we called it compulsive overeating. We now recognize that there are many types of compulsive eating. And I was so excited by what she said that 6 weeks later, I raced right off to my very first OA meeting. And in that first meeting was a Saturday morning, and there were 200 people in the meeting. And I was captivated by people's stories. It was kind of like watching a soap opera on TV for me, but it kept me coming back. I was listening to people's stories. Now, I can tell you that I stole the literature, because I figured if you really wanted me to get well, you would give me the literature. I did buy the big book. Of course I didn't get a sponsor, because nobody could really understand my unique situation. I went to one meeting a week, maybe, because I was a very busy, important person, and you just didn't understand if you thought I should be going to more meetings a week than that. And I would go to the meetings, and I knew that this was where my answer was. I knew recovery was here, but I just wasn't ready yet. And so I would pick up binge foods on the way home, and I would go home and I would binge and I would cry. And my husband at the time said to me, "You know, if it's making you that unhappy, you don't have to go to those meetings." Except I knew that this was where my answer was. So my life in those days, gosh, I look back and how completely different it was. It consisted of me getting up as late in the morning as I possibly could and still make it out the door to get to work on time, of me eating what I called a white breakfast. It was all white foods, and they were so boring. I don't have to do that anymore. My food is delicious, and it feeds me. Yeah, I don't do it for recreation, but I don't have to punish myself with my food either. And so I would eat my white breakfast. I'd fly out the door. I'd apply makeup in the car on the way to my job. I was teaching in those days, and I did not understand that when the school day was over, all of the other teachers were staying to do lesson planning and preparation and talk with each other about students. I was in my car and back out on the freeway, back to home as quick as I could skedaddle. I would stop in the early days, it was one binge place, but eventually it was two and then three. And I would get enough food for me and my friend in the car. But that meant that I had to get not one, but two diet sodas, because I had to keep up the myth that there was a friend in the car. I would go home, I would get in my jammies, and I would spread all of my foods out on a tray, and I would put myself on the sofa.
That's 10 minutes.
Thank you so much, Alma. And I would proceed to eat from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon right on through. Many of you are too young to remember this, but Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, which went from 11:30 until 1 in the morning. Eventually, I got smart, and I moved the TV out of the living room and into our bedroom and had it at the end of the bed. And so I would have the foods arranged around me on the bed. Now, this set up such self-loathing that I had to get rid of that self-loathing. And the best way that I knew to do that was to pick a fight with my husband. So I'd start a fight. And eventually, during the 11 months between when I found program and I finally hit bottom, I picked a fight with him, and I picked up a knife and I stabbed him. And it was in his arm. This was not the first time I had been violent with him. My wedding ring had some diamonds around the edge of it, and I had hit him across the face once and cut him here. And then I refused to take him to the emergency room. The poor guy he was very patient. That was not what led me to hit bottom, my friends. This is a progressive and fatal disease. What led me to hit bottom was that he told on me. He called my therapist and he told her what had happened. And after waiting a couple of weeks to see if I said anything, which I wasn't going to, because I don't know if you know this, but nice upper middle class white girls don't do that kind of thing. Except apparently they do. She confronted me with it. She pinned my ears back and she told me, if you think that your safety is to be found in the refrigerator, you are delusional and you will need to be locked away. And this was so humiliating for me that I made a commitment to her that I would go to the next available meeting. That was the next morning, that I would get a sponsor. I would get a food plan from that sponsor and I would start to work the steps. So I went to a meeting the next morning. There was only one sponsor there. I did not like her, but I had made this commitment. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and I worked with her for the first 3 weeks. She ate way much more food. Astonishingly, she ate more food than I could realistically handle. It felt like binging to me. It worked for her and her lifestyle. So after 3 weeks, I got a different sponsor. I can remember being terrified when I went to meetings. I was so scared. I don't know what I thought you people were going to do to me, but when my sponsor suggested it was time to start attending step study meetings, oh my goodness, I quaked in my shoes. I was so scared. And so let me compress the next basically 42 years and tell you that I was abstinent for 12 years, that at 3.5 years, my husband and I moved from the West Coast back to the East Coast of the U.S. We had no jobs. We had no place to live. It was us and our two cats. And we just kind of went. The only thing I had was I had the meeting list for the town where we were planning to land. And I got there before he did. I flew. He drove our belongings. The first thing I did was find a meeting. We built a house, which, trust me when I tell you, it will take guns to get me to do that ever again, and I didn't eat. I was fired from a job, and I didn't eat. And what led me to eat was, it was really, I don't know how I'd even say it, it was because I was not around the tools that I'm used to using. The steps are always around me, but even after 12 years, I think I hadn't quite figured out how to have them with me all the time. I was in a work situation for one summer where there was no telephone. I was in the wilderness. There were, trust me, there were no meetings. I was doing it on my own. I had my literature with me, but my food plan is that I weigh and measure from a food plan, three meals a day, and there was no possible way to weigh and measure. Somebody else was providing the food. And so I had a slip. And then I have never, ever picked up sugar or flour in 42 years, but I was for about a month. I was really having trouble with quantity. And I consider that a month's long relapse.
5 minutes.
Thank you. I went to graduate school, which I could not have done if I were still eating. My first marriage ended, bless him. I was very close to being married to a second time, and he broke up with me by an email. Just a word to the wise, don't do that. Don't do that. That's really rude. And I did not eat. I am taken care of, and so into my life walked again the love of my life, my childhood sweetheart, and I moved here from New England to North Carolina, and he is in recovery in the beverage program, as I've learned to call it. And through all of that, I did not eat. So I want to talk, just as I end, about how I work my program today. Before I get out of bed in the morning, I say the Serenity Prayer. I recite the first three steps. I recite the third step prayer. I take steps 6 and 7, and I recite all of my character defects and ask to have them removed just for today. And then I get out of bed. I take 10 minutes to do a step 11 in the morning, usually before breakfast. 10 minutes of quiet for sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God. Praying only for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. And I read some program literature every morning with my breakfast. This year it's As Bill Sees It. I rotate through the daily readers. I do 10th step as I go throughout my day. I already talked about my 11th step. And my deal with step 12 is that when I'm asked to give service, I say yes. I do 3 meetings a week, 3 meals a day, and 3 sponsees. And through the miracle of modern technology, my sponsees are all over the world, which I think is really pretty cool. Obviously, as I said, I'm abstinent, according to a food plan. It's no meat, no refined carbohydrates, no sugar in any form. I also don't do caffeine. Obviously, I don't do alcohol. I stay away from aspartame. And basically, I'm a really cheap date. People often say to me, oh my God, you have such willpower. Oh no, my little petunias. I have no willpower whatsoever. I have no willpower. What I have is a program of recovery. The 12 steps is where the recovery is. The 12 steps are what keep me abstinent. I have learned that relapse is not inevitable. Now, we say in this program that the folks in AA, NA have it so easy because in AA, they put the cork in the bottle and they never, ever, ever take it out. Whereas I have to take the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day, pat him, and put him back in. Except a friend of mine in the beverage program said to me, you know, Chrissy, that's not actually true. I have to drink. I just don't have to drink alcohol. So really, stop comparing yourself to me and saying that I have it so much easier than you do, because I don't. That was really eye-opening for me. First of all, it made me stop that kind of comparison. But also what it made me do was stop.
1 minute.
Thank you, Alma. But it also made me stop being so self-absorbed, self-pitying, and self-referential. I will close by saying that since the 1st of January in my husband's and my lives, we have had two deaths, one of them a suicide. A friend has early onset dementia. Another family friend has pancreatic cancer and will not be treating it. My beloved aunt is clearly descending into dementia, and I'm going to be responsible for her. I have an adopted baby elephant who suddenly died of a seizure in Kenya. And my mother-in-law was diagnosed 2 weeks ago with a glioblastoma, which is an aggressive form of brain cancer. You know what the miracle is here? I did not eat. And I don't mean that way that they talk about in the big book where in our first 164 pages, it talks about how the guy said, oh, you know, never crave it anymore, doesn't call my name, right? That pink cloud. Food, I am in a position of safe and protected neutrality. And the only way I got here was by working the 12 steps. And if I can do it, you can do it. Thank you so much for helping me to stay abstinent for another 24 hours. And thank you for letting me be of service.